Chapter 4. The Story. The winding dirt path up the windmill and the community garden was indeed just behind Elnoth's home, and the companions soon found themselves climbing a steep slope past Fregenta Lane.
"So how long has it been since you've seen Flay?"
Lucy asked Zarina as they fell in step on the climb. Phlebas and Torgon forged ahead and continued their argument about whether covered wagons or air balloons were faster travel.
"Where'd you meet?"
Zarina took a moment to answer. She half wanted to join the conversation on balloons or wagons and not talk about her friendship with Flea. Her opinion was firmly on the wagon, the most efficient form of land travel. Yet, reminiscing didn't feel dangerous today. And so they strolled in the afternoon sun. She had to really think about how long it had been since the last time she saw him in person. "Let me think," she stalled. Lucy's question had brought up long-forgotten memories of herself as a young woman barely in her 20s, who had been through an unexpected portal and transported to Novia from the Outlands. She was reminded of the intense fear she felt when she landed near Solas Bridge so many years ago. By Novian reckoning, it had been almost a century ago. Trust has been hard for her, especially here in a completely different world than the one she came from. She didn't take to strangers very well and spent most of the time alone in Novia. When she first arrived, someone called Edvard needed help for the survivors at the Battle of Solas Bridge, and then he had sent her on to Soltown, and from there she made her way to Ardoris. She had never been able to protect herself, but along the way, she began to learn. "Let's see. I met him in Ardoris. At the time, the City of Love had been reeling because of continued separation between Priestess Kazzee and Shogun Saranto. There is still much unrest, even in its once serene streets." "Love," Zarina snorted as she thought to herself. She had spent a long period trying to sort out the cause of the friction between the Shogun and the Priestess, and had concluded that love was more complicated than she could imagine. After a pause to catch her breath, Zarina went on. "I was down at the Traveler's Docks to meet someone, and while I waited, I had been gossiping with one of the barmaids, Emma, just outside the Tavern of the Wind, and in all of the bustle of the dock, a call of thief, thief, rang out, and someone came careening out of the alleys, chased closely by a displeased merchant who caught up with him at the dock, shouting at the young man all the while about respect and honor. I gathered the food had been stolen from the merchant. Eventually, the merchant finished yelling and shaking the thief and tossed him into the canal just outside the tavern. Turning and continuing his loud tirade against the thieves, he left huffing and shouting at everyone he met. It was obvious the thief couldn't swim and I couldn't leave him to die, so I fished the miscreant out of the canal. It was Phlebas. That was about 15 years ago."
"Phlebas stealing?"
Lucy looked shocked, then slapped her thigh and laughed.
"That explains so much."
"Well, that day we sat together in a small park while he dried. Then he was kind enough to offer to share his food and shelter. He had stolen a bun earlier, and then some cheese, just before I found him drowning. The cheese survived the dunking in the water, so we ate in a cozy spot under a bush just outside Ardoris. Then we slept there. It wasn't much, but it was enough." Phlebas and Zarina had become inseparable from that moment on. He taught her how to pickpocket on the streets of Ardoris, and she taught him how to read and how to swim. Over the 6 years they spent together in Novia before Phoebus went to school, they escaped many close calls, with various city guards and various dubious encounters on the roads between cities. He had been her greatest and dearest friend through it all. Zarina continued, "It helps to have a traveling companion," nodding toward Torgon ahead on the path. Zarina noted, "You know how it is. You've always had one. This world constantly surprises me. It is similar, but not like the Outlands at all."
"A companion?"
"Torgon?" Lucy snorted.
"My brother can be accused of many things, but he is not a man of much conversation, and his value as a companion is limited."
Lucy may have understated the value she placed on her brother's companionship, but she understood Zarina's point. Still, he was someone you shared your time with, who watched your back for you, Zarina argued her point. Zarina smiled. Phoebus had her back in every fight they'd been in. She recalled one especially close call with an extremely obnoxious mountain troll. They had been tasked with taking one of his toenails to someone who would pay dearly for it. Phoebus and Zarina found out why they were being paid so much when they discovered the mound of human skeleton bones the troll had piled beside his cave. They fought back to back in that one. It had taken all their skills combined to survive. She smiled wryly, remembering the exhilaration of jumping off that high bridge into a waterfall during the dramatic escape and Flea right beside her on the way down. "I got it!" he shouted, holding up a filthy, gnarled toenail when they both found themselves alive on the bank of the river far downstream from the trolls and their bridge.
"So, why'd you part ways?"
Lucy probed, partly stirring Zarina out of her memories. "The sale of that toenail paid for Phoebus to attend the academy in Central Brittany. And he excelled. Once he got into the school, there were scholarships and awards, too. Through the years, Zarina proudly kept his messages to her, describing the goings-on at the castle library. There were not many letters, but she cherished each one. They were now tucked in a waxed cloth, in the safety of her pack. She had missed his company and his inquisitive mind. Becoming a scholar was what Phoebus was meant for. Certainly he needed to be near books in a way that I don't," Zarina confessed after careful thought. While Phoebus attended school, Zarina found steady work with her bow. It kept her fed, and it kept her employed. There were many people in this land who needed help and would pay a bit of gold for the service she provided. Zarina became a tracker, a guide, and in the end, a bodyguard. It was a life she found satisfying. The last 4 months in the Mines of Elysium was as settled as she had ever been in Novia.
I think it's about 9 years.
Lucy stopped walking suddenly.
The entire time he's been in school?
Lucy was incredulous. I didn't realize how much time had passed until he wrote to me about this mission. All he said was that he needed my bow, and that the pay was going to be low. He didn't tell me the nature of this mystery. Lucy snorted. After a few more steps, she asked,
"Why now? I mean, after all this time, why did you decide now was the time to join him? He has asked for your company before this. I know he has."
Zarina looked over at Lucy's kind face. She appeared to be extraordinarily protective of her friend Phoebus. Zarina admired the quality of loyalty and said gently, "Time passes differently for me, and more time passed than I was aware of.
And then it just became easier not to go visit because I'd been away for so long. He was the first Novian I became friends with, and I believe he knew I would come if he actually needed me. Not, oh, this is too hard and I need you to come rescue me from here. I can't live on my own. Here she paused before adding as an afterthought, I thought all Novians would be like him, but it turns out he is special. When he wrote asking for my support, I came as soon as I could. She shrugged. Lucy nodded enthusiastically.
He's not as helpless as he appears, though, is he?
Zarina laughed. No. He's very rarely helpless. But he wouldn't survive on his own outside the city anymore. He's out of practice.
Phlebas talked about you occasionally. In the first year, he admired you greatly, but less after you didn't rescue him from himself. I half expected you to turn up in the city and claim him when he nearly bombed his first year at the academy, you know?
Shrugging, Zarina confided, I almost did, but somebody wiser than me stopped me from going. They told me a tale just before I started out to collect him that made me think that Phlebas and I didn't have the same path in life. If I had claimed him then, he would never have become who he is now.
It nearly broke him, you know.
Yeah, it nearly broke me too. Lucy stared with compassion.
It was awful. He was sure you would come.
Zarina walked in silence for a little while.
So I hear you're a healer. Do you use magic, too? Zarina changed the subject.
Yes, sometimes, but I like to rely most often on the potions and lotions that support life. I find each of us reacts a little differently to magic and to potions, but with proper life supports, we all heal at a greater rate. So, unless the injuries are acute, I use herbal skills and cooking to mend.
Where did your interest in plants start?
Where did your interest in tracking an archery start?
Lucy countered.
Who says I'm interested in tracking an archery? Zarina tried to look innocent and pretended to trip over a root on the path. They both laughed then.
Going first, Lucy began.
I suppose it was my grandmother who got me interested in plants. We used to go picking herbs in the forest together, and she would talk about how she would preserve each herb and what kinds of things the plants would help us with if we let them. She had a real affinity with life. I spent so much of my youth helping her to care for her plants in her garden, and spent a lot of time learning how to find rare ones in other areas of the world from her. Then I learned to preserve medicines. When I got a little older, I used to go with her to help people who needed her. She spent her life restoring her neighbors and community with her plants and healing touch until her death. I still miss her, especially when I'm sick. I went to Central Brittany to learn more about plants, and on the way, learned some healing magic spells as well. It was quite a surprise to find out I could heal people with magic as well, and sometimes better, than with plants alone.
Lucy had not meant to be quite so personal with her response to the question, but Zarina made it easy to trust her, and just be honest about what she thought and believed. It was refreshing. She didn't demand answers, but waited until Lucy was ready to open up a little. Your grandmother must have been very proud of you.
Now you,
Lucy said, looking over at Zarina, who was still mulling over what Lucy had said about having a grandmother healer.
Well, I didn't learn how to track or how to shoot a bow until I arrived in Novia.
That was what, 100 years ago?
Lucy teased. Zerinia snorted. By Novian calendars, more or less.
Go on.
Sure. Well, Phlebas and I had been living on the streets of Ardoras until the guards made us move along. I think we might have been in a community up around Desolus by that time I shot my first bow. Up until then, I had been learning to use a pair of knives that Phlebas and I took off a red sash bandit. Anyway, I picked up an elven bow off one of the creeps that Flea and I had to fight off one night when the creep tried to steal my blanket. And more, if he could have gotten it. She looked over at Lucy. When I first arrived, I did pick up a bow, and I used it at close range on a few undead and skeletons, but hadn't really stuck with it, and my aim was really bad. I sold it for food. I didn't need it in the city, and I needed food to live. But in Desolus, it felt good to have another one in my hands. The deserts had been a fine learning arena, lots of space and few citizens to get in the way. The cacti and the small rabbits and birds of the desert became the first moving targets.
Too much time on your hands?
Lucy wanted to know. Zerina shook her head to clear it a bit of the memory. Yeah, absolutely. After picking up that bow, I spent my free time shooting at targets and then small desert animals that I could aim for. I lost most of my arrows back then. In their early days together, she and Phlebas spent much of their time searching for spent arrows in the sand near Desolus. After all this time, she was still very frugal with arrows and didn't waste an arrow if she could recover it. Grinning, she went on, "We ate much better after I learned to hit them. Squirrel and rabbits, birds, and then later fish. Yes, even fish. I didn't like to miss because it usually meant we didn't eat if I missed." She looked somber as she recalled those hungry days. "Tracking is something I learned as a child." Then she suddenly stopped talking and started walking a little faster. It was fast enough that speech was no longer possible for either of them. "Where are you living these days?" Zerina changed the subject again, after catching her breath again at the top, knowing only that after her first assignment that Lucy had left the city, same as Torgon.
"Do you know Mistrandir at all?"
Lucy inquired. "A little. Enough to know of the three main islands and the Serpent Shape. But I don't know the history of Mistrandir." Nodding, Lucy declared,
"Not many do."
She went on,
"I live on the West Island, Slange Hall, where the tail of the serpent would be. Up in Grenfall Mountain Range, in a cabin in the woods near a hamlet called Jade Mountain."
"Huh? The Jade Empire stretches from Jade Valley all the way to Mistrandir?" Zerina seemed surprised. "I knew of an island in the Hidden Vale, controlled by the Jade Empire, but I didn't know about Mistrandir. There are jade dragons everywhere, it would seem."
"There are two jade communities up in Mistrandir. Jade Garden is the other. On the middle island, the belly, Slaanjmag. If you like Jade Valley, you would love it there. Seriously, after this inquiry, why don't you come with me, and I'll show you around both Jade Empire towns. There is a balloon that takes us all the way from Jade Valley."
"I'll think about that. I sure would like to see what could be prettier than this town right here, right now." Zerina's gaze swept back down the crescent-shaped harbor and busy markets below.
"Yes, this harbor is stunning. The Jade Dragons seem to have a fair share of talented gardeners in their midst. I think the leader of the guild is even a royal gardener. We met him at the meeting, Governor Hari. They have 4 towns in their empire. I haven't been to one up in the Hidden Vale, Jade Island, but I still think Jade Valley is the prettiest.
Why live in the Jade Mountain when you think the Jade Valley is the prettiest?
I live in Jade Mountain because it feels like home to me, Lucy added. There are a few young people there that I like to keep an eye on as well. Years ago, I promised another of the Outlanders that I would care for the orphans. They were children then. I am fond of them both.
Nodding while looking down at the seaside valley below, Zarina spoke, "This is stunning and quaint. I don't think I'll forget this town." "There it is," Torgon called out from the road ahead, pointing toward a large sky balloon.
"That's not a windmill, brother,"
Lucy shouted back. "The windmill is near the balloon, remember?" Phlebas soothed, with his map and papers pulled out and open before the twins started fighting about this, too.
"It sure is windy enough up here for one."
Lucy found her breath stolen from the force of the gusts, but managed to squeak out her comment regardless. And it was indeed windy where the windmill was found, among the barns, the gardens, and the skyship moored above all. Ivan was outside of the windmill, fiddling with a piece of machinery when we arrived. "Hello," Zarina called out. As she got closer, she could still smell alcohol on him, and now as well the black, greasy mess that he was currently spreading all over the bit of metal he held.
"Are you drunk, Ivan?"
she asked him straight out.
"There yous all are."
He didn't even look shocked at the question as he shook his head.
"Not so much as I can't fix this gear here."
"Will you tell us the story then?" Phlebas wanted to know without so much as a how do you do. "I can give you a hand with that," he added, rolling up his sleeves and picking up a wrench.
"No, I've got it. Thank you mightily."
Sighing and setting down the gear, Ivan picked up an old rag and began to clean his hands.
"Well, surely I'll tell you it, you see, since you've come all this way and all."
He took a swig from a brown jug. He then offered it to the companions. They declined, even Torgon. Without another pause, Ivan began as he continued to grease the metal piece he had picked up again.
"When I was a young'un, and my granny was still the gravedigger and keeper of the dragon bones here in the valley, a bard from far away came to the village. It was worth Granny's wrath to stay up late that night, hidden, of course, to hear the stories and songs. When that old bard, can't recall his name anymore, Mingo, Jingo? Oh, Mingo, that's it. He's an Outlander. Like you."
He turned to look directly at Zarina for the first time.
"What's the keeper of the dragon bones?"
Lucy wanted to know, as Phlebas shushed her. Ivan just stared at her for a moment, and then went on with his story without answering her question.
"Well, anyways, the bard stopped in for a bowl of Granny's pumpkin soup just after the leaves fell that autumn. Just so you know, bards were and still are the best source of news for young'uns and grow-ups about gossip and battle and wars for a wide swath of the neighboring towns and villages on the island. Anyways, that night, after their bard told the story about the glorious Kaelin Caitlin fighting all alone against 2 massive trolls and a bunch of mages at the Battle of Upper Tiers. Afterward, when the grow-ups had settled down again and Granny had wetted her whistle, I heard the scariest tale you ever did hear."
He paused to take another drink from his jug, and this time, Torgon joined him.
Mingo spoke up then, accepting a large frothing mug and letting the crowd quiet down. "I'd like a moment to think of another. Does anyone else have a tale to share to warm this dark night whilst I quench my thirst? Surely Jenny will tell one. How about that old graveyard story, Jen?" Granny grunted as she sat back down by the fire after adding another log and took a long pull from her pint of ale before beginning. The bard nodded and smiled a little to encourage her like. He strummed his harp low and quiet so he could hear Granny talk. It looked to me like he was settling to listen. Or maybe he was anticipating the fresh ale my Dow was pouring for him.
Ivan paused for another swig before going on. This time, each of the companions had a swig from the jug in turn while Ivan continued.
"Well, anyway, so Granny, she starts talking low and quiet and tells of a black fog. The dark, dank fog that rolled in the afternoon of her 16th birthday. After the cake and the singing, and during a game of truth or dare, the one friend of hers, Elaine Dugan, had it in her to try and catch a big old graveyard spider for a pet. And so she dragged the three of them along on a dare to go to the graveyard after dark with their school friend Tristan, Granny Jenny's younger brother, my Uncle John, and Granny Jenny. There were four of them. Just like you four. Huh. Interesting. Anyway, even if they look scared, they were also mostly curious to see the graveyard after dark. Or maybe they just wanted to do something slightly dangerous to show off to their friends later. Anywho, Granny and her pals went sneaking into the old ruins.
He giggled gleefully.
"I got an idea in my noggin. Hey, you know what? Let's go on down to the ruins and I'll finish telling yous all the tale in the very spot my granny said she..." "Well, let's not get telling the tale out of order,"
he directed.
"Meet me in the Skullgate graveyard yonder to the clock tower. Yeah, you probably passed it on the way here. And meet me at my granny's grave in the back corner when you is done your resting."
Ivan took a last swig of his pint and tucked it back under his arm, then pointed west, towards the old graveyards. They turned as one to follow the line of his pointed finger. By the time they turned back, he was gone. This time, he disappeared quicker than any of the companions would have dreamed he could. They looked at each other and grinned. "My, my. What has Granny gotten herself into?" Torgon mocked. He was now intrigued to find out what Ivan's old Granny Jenny had done, but didn't want to be the only one, so he ridiculed. "Graveyard, bring it on!" Lucy chortled and joined in.
"What big ears you have, Grandmother!"
Torgon joined Lucy, and the pair of them became incoherent with laughter. Recognizing the sarcasm and the nervousness of the unknown, Zarina found herself grinning a little. She could see a little more of what drove Torgon, bravado and brains. In her experience, those often were a lethal combination, especially in group settings. Her eyes narrowed as she judged whether Torgon would be a liability during this adventure or an asset. She decided, in the end, that his quiet demeanor and skill with his axe offset any false bravado he might possess. Ivan could not be more annoying, disappearing all the time, just to tease them with more information. Zarina wanted to know why Ivan was leading them to a graveyard instead of just meeting them there in the first place. She was ready to go after Ivan until she realized that Lucy had wandered off and was petting one of the sheep in a nearby pen. While Torgon and Zarina gathered Lucy back to the group, Phlebas had vanished into the windmill to have a look at the system of gears that turn the wind turbine. He was found halfway up inside, sketching the design of cogs for further study. Finally, the companions were ready to backtrack to the graveyard and to find Ivan for a third time.